Chapter 5. Painful time of it in the cabin of the brig. In the end, Morrison, casting desperately for an idea in the blackness of his despondency, hit upon the notion of inviting Hest to travel with him in his brig, and have a share in his trading ventures up to the amount of his loan. It is characteristic of Hest's unattached, floating existence that he was in a position to accept this proposal. There is no reason to think that he wanted particularly just then to go poking aboard the brig into all the holes and corners of the archipelago, where Morrison picked up most of his trade. Far from it, but he would have consented to almost any arrangement in order to put an end to the harrowing scene in the cabin. There was at once a great transformation act. Morrison raising his diminished head, and sticking the glass in his eye to look affectionately at Hest, a bottle being uncorked, and so on. It was agreed that nothing should be said to anyone of this transaction. Morrison, you understand, was not proud of the episode, and he was afraid of being unmercifully chaffed. An old bird like me, to let myself be trapped by those damned Portuguese rascals. I should never hear the last of it. We must keep it dark. From quite other motives, among which his native delicacy was the principal, Hest was even more anxious to bind himself to silence. A gentleman would naturally shrink from the part of heavenly messenger that Morrison would force upon him. It made Hest uncomfortable, as it was. And perhaps he did not care that it should be known that he had some means, whatever they might have been sufficient, at any rate, to enable him to lend money to people. These two had a duet down there, like conspirators in a comic opera, of HSSH, SHSSH. Secrecy. Secrecy. It must have been funny, because they were very serious about it. And for a time the conspiracy was successful in so far that we all concluded that Hest was boarding with the good-natured Somerset, spawning on the imbecile Morrison in his brig. But you know how it is with all such mysteries. There is always a leak somewhere. Morrison himself, not a perfect vessel by any means, was bursting with gratitude, and under the stress he must have let out something vague enough to give the island gossip a chance. And you know how kindly the world is in its comments on what it does not understand. A rumor sprang out that Hest, having obtained some mysterious hold on Morrison, had fastened himself on him, and was sucking him dry. Those who had traced these mutters back to their origin were very careful not to believe them. The originator, it seems, was a certain Schomburg, a big, manly, bearded creature of the Teutonic persuasion, with an ungovernable tongue which surely must have worked on a pivot. Whether he was a lieutenant of the reserve, as he declared, I don't know. Out there he was by profession a hotel keeper, first in Bangkok, then somewhere else, and ultimately in Surabaya. He dragged after him up and down that section of the tropical belt a silent, frightened, little woman with long ringlets, who smiled at one stupidly, showing a blue tooth. I don't know why so many of us patronized his various establishments. He was a noxious ass, and he satisfied his lust for silly gossip at the cost of his customers. It was he who, one evening, as Morrison and Hest went past the hotel they were not his regular patrons, whispered mysteriously to the mixed company assembled on the veranda, "The spider and the fly just gone by, gentlemen." Then, very important and confidential, his thick paw at the side of his mouth, "We are among ourselves. Well, gentlemen, all I can say is, I don't you ever get mixed up with that Swede. Don't you ever get caught in his web." Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.